Hi listeners, it's Alex here. This week I'm going to be reading through a couple of stories we published recently about Canada's response to Israel's new far-right extremist government and what some internal communications from within the Canadian government tell us about the government's attitude towards the Israeli government stacked up against its very warm welcoming of the new Netanyahu administration, which is heavily influenced by convicted racists, supporters of terrorism, and just generally ultra far-right political parties within that country. So the first story I'm going to read to you is one we published earlier this month, which looked at internal reports sent by Canadian diplomats in Israel to Global Affairs Canada staff regarding the Israeli election results that saw far-right extremist parties propelled into a position of high influence in regards to putting Netanyahu back in the prime ministership in Israel. And then a second story looking at internal communications from Canadian diplomats during the airstrikes on Gaza that Israel launched last August. And specifically, they looked at the actions of a far-right Israeli politician who was then just a member of the Knesset, who is now the Minister of National Security. So the purpose of these stories is really to illustrate that Canadian government staff are very well aware of the ultra-extremism in the Israeli government. But nonetheless, despite these warnings and despite this very clear, explicit acknowledgement of their dangerous and violent behavior, Canadian cabinet ministers Justin Trudeau and Melanie Joly have been really unwilling to speak out or even offer minimal pushback against this new government. So in this sense, they're ignoring their own internal warnings about the extremist nature of the government. But before we get into that, I really want to stress something here that's been coming out of a lot of sort of Palestinian activist groups and other analyzers of the situation in 48 Palestine, which is to say that although this new government in Israel is far more overtly extreme in its rhetoric and its policy, the idea that the governments that preceded it were somehow moderate by comparison, you know, really doesn't hold much water. You know, it was under these previous governments that world-renowned human rights organizations found that Israel was practicing the crime of apartheid in all areas under its control. 2022 was the deadliest year in 16 years for Palestinians in terms of deaths. And also in 2022, that was the year we saw Israel's killing of Palestinian journalist Shireen Abu Akla and a complete lack of accountability for the military for doing that deliberate killing. So I just wanted to flag that right at the top here, that we shouldn't be under any illusions that this far-right government in Israel is really a meaningful break from Israeli policy that preceded it. But nonetheless, I think it's interesting to examine the Trudeau government's assessment of this new government and its continued refusal to really take any action at all against the state of Israel, despite its ongoing violence against the people of Palestine. So this first article, as I mentioned, is published earlier this month. The publication date is January 4th, 2023. Canada welcomes Israel's new government despite internal warnings of far-right extremism. The Trudeau government is offering warm words of congratulations to Israel's new government despite Global Affairs Canada staff acknowledging internally that the administration is highly influenced by, quote, extreme far-right political parties that occupy key positions of power. In November, right-wing Likud party leader Benjamin Netanyahu won a majority that returned him to power in a coalition with the extremist religious Zionism movement, ushering in the most far-right government in Israel's history. Itamar Ben-Gvir, one of the far-right coalition leaders and now Minister of National Security, has previously called for disloyal Palestinians to be expelled from Israel. He is a former member of the illegal Catch Party, an openly racist terrorist group that is frequently described as fascist. The new National Security Minister has also been convicted of inciting racial hatred and is on record expressing his admiration of Baruch Goldstein, an Israeli-American terrorist who murdered 29 Palestinians in a 1994 attack. Ben-Gvir, along with the rest of Netanyahu's new government, was appointed shortly before the new year, prompting protests from some progressive Israelis. Netanyahu said last month that his government's top priority is to expand legal settlements in the occupied West Bank, reflecting the wishes of his far-right coalition partners, some of whom live in the settlements. On Tuesday, so this was back earlier this month, Ben-Gvir entered the compound housing the Al-Aqsa Mosque in occupied East Jerusalem, the third holiest site in Islam, in a move condemned as a, quote, unprecedented provocation by Palestinian leaders. The move was indirectly criticised by Lisa Stadelbauer, Canada's ambassador to Israel, who tweeted, quote, "We oppose actions that risk destabilization and undermine the prospects for a comprehensive, just, and lasting peace for the Palestinian and Israeli people." Bezalel Smotrich, a member of the Religious Zionism Party and Netanyahu's new finance minister, is also an illegal settler. He has described his desire to abort any hopes for equality for Palestinians, organized anti-LGBTQ events, and stated that he wants Israel's judicial system to be governed according to theocratic laws. In 2005, he was arrested for suspected Jewish terrorism in Gaza, but never charged. Despite these well-known far-right extremist elements, Canadian cabinet ministers have publicly welcomed Netanyahu's new administration. After the election, Prime Minister Justin Trudeau congratulated the right-wing leader's victory and hailed Canada's friendship with Israel. "Together, we will continue to make progress on shared priorities," Trudeau continued in a statement, also giving a special mention to the Canada-Israel Free Trade Agreement. On December 30th, Foreign Affairs Minister Melanie Joly offered congratulations to her newly appointed Israeli counterpart, Eli Cohen, a member of Likud. "Canada looks forward to working together and building on our areas of shared interests," Joly tweeted. Neither Trudeau nor Joly's statements acknowledged or expressed concerns about the extremist elements in the new government. The rise of the Israeli far right was widely predicted ahead of the November election, including among Canadian government staff whose internal descriptions of the new governing partners were more candid than the minister's public statements. Shortly before the election, a GAC staffer based in Israel told senior Canadian officials in a partly redacted report obtained by the Maple through an access to information request that the most likely outcome was a Netanyahu victory, relying on support from, quote, extremist right-wing parties. The Likud leader, the GAC staffer wrote, "would have to rely on religious Zionism to govern, and would be forced to award them key ministries such as interior, public security, or justice. In this scenario," the staffer warned, "Netanyahu would be left with no one in government to, quote, counterbalance some of the more extremist right-wing elements." On election night, the GAC staffer reported, "Besides Netanyahu, the big winner of the night was the extreme far-right religious Zionism Otzma Yehudit Alliance. Its leaders, Bezalel Smotrich and Itamar Ben-Gvir, emerged from the election with increased political clout and the ability to demand prominent ministries in a Netanyahu-led government." GAC did not respond to a request for clarification from the Maple regarding Canada's position on the overtly extremist factions in Israel's new government. Michael Bukert, vice president of the advocacy group Canadians for Justice and Peace in the Middle East, told the Maple his organization is outraged by Canada's business-as-usual approach to the new Israeli government. He noted that Cohen, whom Joly specifically congratulated, put forward a bill last year to criminalize displaying the Palestinian flag on Israeli university campuses and said that those who identify as Palestinian would receive help to move to Gaza on a one-way ticket. Netanyahu's government has put in positions of power over the infrastructure of occupation the most far-right extremist and racist Israeli figures that are out there, said Bukert. He said it is unclear whether Canada would boycott public interactions with the most openly extremist figures in Netanyahu's government. However, Bukert said that targeted boycotts would not be remotely sufficient to send a strong message to the Netanyahu administration. "It's the government itself that is committed to these policies and practices. It's a far-right government, not just far-right ministers," he said. "Any normalization of this government gives encouragement to its policies," Bukert added. "If Canada warmly welcomes the arrival of this far-right government, without any mention of its annexation plans or the extremists overseeing the lives of Palestinians, it only gives us a signal that Israel's impunity will continue." The acknowledgement of the Netanyahu government's extremist partners in Canada's internal communications could be a sign that the Trudeau government might consider applying limited pressure behind the scenes while maintaining friendly ties in public. However, said Bukert, there is no way to evaluate the effectiveness or even the existence of such a strategy. "They're asking us to believe that maybe they're doing something behind the scenes, but there's no reason to take them at their word," he explained, pointing out that on December 31st, Canada voted against a UN motion to refer Israel's occupation of Palestine to the International Court of Justice. The motion passed. "Here is a moment for Canada to stand up for international law, which it talks about in the context of Russia all the time," said Bukert. Instead, Canada sent a very clear signal by voting against that resolution, against international law, against any consequences whatsoever for this new government. Even some mainstream pro-Israel groups have expressed concerns about members of Netanyahu's new government, with some admitting that it will make their job of responding to criticism of Israel's human rights record even harder. However, while Israel's new far-right government has intensified fears among some Palestinians, others point out that the relatively moderate government of Yair Lapid that preceded the new administration oversaw the deadliest year for Palestinians in 16 years, which included the Israeli forces' deliberate killing of renowned Al Jazeera journalist Shireen Abu Ekleh. The intensifying violence against Palestinians last year came amid reports from leading international human rights groups that concluded that Israel is practicing the crime of apartheid in all areas under its control. Palestinians have lived under a fascist regime, essentially, for decades, and it doesn't matter whether it is far right or the supposed left like Lapid. Life for Palestinians under Israeli control is apartheid and domination, said Bukert, adding that policy changes under Netanyahu are likely to be quantitative rather than qualitative. CJPME is calling on the Canadian government to immediately expel Israel's ambassador, Ronan Hoffman, in addition to suspending military trade with Israel and all trade with illegal settlements. Okay, so that was the first article. This second article, I'll be perfectly honest, I was not expecting to write this one. This second piece was as a result of a Freedom of Information request that I filed last year regarding Canada's response to Israel's attacks on the Gaza Strip in August 2022. But I found within these documents that Canadian diplomats were actually monitoring Ben-Gavir's behavior even back then and how he was stoking tensions and endangering civilian lives, even at that point. So that's what I'm going to read next. I'll try and skip over some of the points that are just repeating what was in the first one. Diplomats warned about Israeli politician who provoked violence. Then Trudeau welcomed his government. Last August, Canadian diplomats noted that a far-right Israeli politician had provoked attacks against Palestinian civilians and escalated a dangerous situation that forced Canadian embassy staff to take extra safety precautions. 4 months later, Canadian ministers warmly welcomed Israel's new government in which the same politician, Itamar Ben-Gavir, was appointed Minister of National Security. Despite continued pressure from human rights activists, the Trudeau government has provided no indication that it plans to boycott meetings with extremist ministers in Israel's new government, which is heavily influenced by convicted racists and supporters of far-right terrorism. The internal warning about Ben-Gavir came during Israel's attacks on Gaza last year. On August 5th, Israel launched a series of preemptive airstrikes on the area, resulting in the deaths of 49 Palestinians, including 17 children. The attack followed tensions between the Islamic Jihad movement and Israeli forces, as well as Israel's closure of a border crossing through which fuel is transported to Gaza's only power plant. During the raids, far-right extremist Ben-Gavir, an openly racist member of Israel's Knesset and a convicted supporter of terrorism, fueled tensions further by marching towards the Al-Aqsa Mosque, the third holiest site in Islam, in Jerusalem. News reports in Israel noted that the move risked escalating the fighting, which at that point had already claimed dozens of Palestinian lives. The provocation was also flagged in an internal Global Affairs Canada situation report, obtained by the Maple through an ATIP request, sent by Canada's diplomatic staff in Ramallah to senior GAC staff in Ottawa. The report, dated August 7th, explained that skirmishes between Palestinians, Israeli forces, and far-right Israeli nationalists had broken out in East Jerusalem, and noted that, quote, further confrontations were reported inside the Old City around midnight when far-right Israeli MK Ben-Gavir participated in a march through the Old City towards the Al-Aqsa compound. The Israeli forces, the report continued, then escorted Ben-Gavir and other nationalists into the esplanade of the Al-Aqsa compound, while Palestinian worshippers were denied entry to the area. Some Palestinians were also arrested. The report noted that during the provocation, Israeli forces arrested AFP photographer Ahmad Gharabli, while footage on social media showed, quote, violent assaults taking place by right-wing nationalists against Palestinian residents and journalists. Gharabli had been documenting some of those attacks. The situation had become so dangerous that the old city was placed off limits for Canadian embassy staff, and out of an abundance of caution, staff in Ramallah were to travel in armoured vehicles only for official business. The report was approved by Canada's then representative to the Palestinian Authority, Robin Wetlaufer. In November, Ben-Gvir would go on to be appointed by Israeli Prime Minister Benjamin Netanyahu, who is relying on support from the far right to curtail Israel's judicial independence as he faces trial for corruption, as Minister of National Security. So that goes back to my previous reports. So Prime Minister Justin Trudeau and Foreign Affairs Minister Melanie Joly both offered warm words of congratulations to Netanyahu's government, despite those acknowledgements in the internal election reports that the administration is highly influenced by extreme far-right political figures, including Ben-Gvir. And then, of course, we saw that after his appointment, Ben-Gvir led yet another march through the compound housing the Al-Aqsa Mosque, similar to the one he did during the attacks on Gaza last August. And that was condemned by Palestinian leaders as an unprecedented provocation and indirectly criticized by Lisa Stadelbauer, Canada's ambassador to Israel. And just a quick note to say here that GAC did not respond to a request for comment either on this story regarding the internal situation report sent during the attack on Gaza last August. The situation report describing Ben-Gvir's provocation is the latest example of Trudeau government officials appearing to internally acknowledge some cases of Israel's aggression against journalists and civilians, but offering little, if any, public condemnation of those attacks or calls for accountability. In July, the Maple revealed that shortly after Israeli forces shot and killed Palestinian journalist Shireen Abu Akleh, GAC received a report from Canada's diplomatic office in Ramallah, noting that Israel has a well-documented track record of failing to properly investigate when its security forces attack reporters. The next day, May 12th, a separate report from the Canadian embassy in Tel Aviv acknowledged that Israel's narrative claiming that a Palestinian gunman may have killed Abu Akleh had been, quote, largely debunked. Despite the information in these reports, Joly's statements in the aftermath of Abu Akleh's death excluded calls for an independent investigation, and the minister did not condemn Israel as the perpetrator. Following the attacks on Gaza last year, the Trudeau government received heavy criticism as the only statement it issued came from a relatively obscure government-owned Twitter account and was not echoed or boosted by any ministers. The statement did not mention the deaths of children and defended Israel's use of force. More recently, Canada refused to join more than 90 other countries who condemned punitive actions taken by the Israeli government against Palestinians in retaliation for a UN request for the International Court of Justice to provide an opinion regarding Israel's occupation of Palestine. Instead, Canada published its own separate statement earlier this week that did not call for Israel's measures to be reversed and portrayed them as being directed against the Palestinian Authority rather than the Palestinian people. We spoke to Michael Bukert, again, the Vice President of Canadians for Justice and Peace in the Middle East. He said it was notable that Ben-Gvir was specifically named in the August situation report and that diplomatic staff were forced to take extra safety precautions. He said, "Clearly they know who Ben-Gvir is and know how dangerous he is. At the same time, none of this experience seems to have factored at all into Canada's reception of the new government. No matter what happens on the ground, none of that trickles up into how the Canadian government responds." And just as a follow-up to CJPME's earlier demands that Canada expel the Israeli ambassador Ronan Hoffman, in addition to suspending military trade and trade with illegal settlements, Bukert said there has so far not been much response from Canadian politicians to those demands, but this comes in the context of Parliament not yet being in session. He said, "There can't just be silence and there can't just be a symbolic gesture of disapproval. There needs to be actual action taken to address what they know to be a dangerous and volatile situation that puts millions of people into further harm." So that's those two articles. I'll put a link to both of them in the show notes. And just a reminder to all our listeners, if you don't regularly read the Maple's online print content, then I would encourage you to go over to readthemaple.com. You can subscribe for free to just get a weekly taster of our public interest reporting. And if you feel so inclined, you can become a paying subscriber for $7 a month to support our 100% reader-funded independent journalism. Thanks for listening.